afternoon. We welcome to the program a wonderful sports writer, author, and if you've heard as many appearances on our show, you know a lifelong music fan as well. He's got a brand new special on Sirius XM Radio's 40s Junction. Happy to welcome back our friend Bob Ryan. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Rich.
So this look at 1924, a centennial tribute to a year that is huge when it comes to what we know as the Great American Songbook.
Yes, I've long been aware of this. 24 just had a lot going on. And I went about, and last November, I think, I approached Lou Simon at Sirius, who had put me on the air once before playing favorites on the Sinatra Channel. And I said, you guys, in the 2024, going to be a centennial year of a really big year in the history of American popular music, you know, you might consider, you know, picking some kind of tribute. He said, you do it. That wasn't my goal, believe me. I wasn't my thought at all. And I said, oh my God, really? Yeah, you do it. Well, long story short, I went down and I came out with a playlist from 24. Now, the one proviso important, the versions that I selected would have to be done in the 40s.
Right.
It's on the 40s Junction, Channel 71. And that changed things. And of course, it made digging up a few things harder. But we did it. I did it with some help and came up with a playlist. And I went down and recorded my tracks for it in January. And I'm going to have to admit, there were times during the year when I gave up on the idea that it would ever see the light of day. And last week, I got it. Thursday, I got a notice from Mr. Simon that it's going to happen in next week, and here's the schedule. And my first appearance was yesterday at 3 p.m., and it's going to be re-aired Wednesday night at 7 and Friday at 12 noon, all on Channel 71, the 40s Junction, Sirius XM. And also, it's up on the app, Sirius X1 app. You can find 1924 Bob Ryan or something, whatever, and the show is running. So I'm thrilled. I mean, I'm completely blown away the idea that they actually went through with this.
Well, you had me at Isham Jones, because as someone who loves music from that time period, and to hear you mention him and to play a number of his great songs, because he's one of those people that a lot of folks don't know, but was such a huge influence on American music.
He and Gus Kahn were the duo of, as duos go. They were the Lerner and Lowe, or whatever they were, the Rodgers and Hart of the 20s. They were big time 20s guys. And Isham Jones, his biggest protege turned out to be Woody Herman. I'm glad you appreciate Isham Jones. Yeah, because how many Ishams are there? So that's what you always need to have the Isham.
And, of course, the Gershwins are represented with what I think is one of the great American compositions of all time, Rhapsody in Blue.
Well, yeah, and of course, that's just George himself, because there's no lyrics, so it's all George's. And what a story that on February 12th, 1924, people were invited to a concert an afternoon at the Aurelian Hall in Lower Manhattan. And they were told it was going to be they weren't sure exactly what they were getting, but this new phenom, George Gershwin, who wrote a composition expressly for the Paul Whiteman Orchestra. And it turned out to be Rhapsody in Blue. And the version I was able to use was from Glenn Miller in 1941. He recorded a very edited version, shall we say, but it fits perfectly with this show.
Well, 24 is such an interesting year because you had so many different influences in popular music, from the Broadway stage,
yes,
to classical, yes, to jazz, country music, all of it coming together.
It was really a pivotal year. The Tin Pan Alley was really hitting its stride, and Broadway was very big. And you're right. And jazz, of course, was making its mark significantly in America. These are the Roaring Twenties, after all. But that year, a lot of things just came together. I've known this for a long time, that 24 was special, but I certainly never dreamed that there'd be a forum for me to do this. And I was really thrilled to be able to do it.
What was the biggest challenge in putting together the playlist? And because obviously you had to limit the number of songs.
Yeah. Well, the idea, sure, just picking and choosing. I recorded tracks. There was editing going on here, naturally, from their standpoint. So they made a couple of choices about what to leave in, as opposed, and I might have differed on one or two from the possibilities. I did record tracks that we could, with more songs than they really, because they need to fit it into an hour, and I knew that. And so they got it down beautifully into an hour. But the hardest thing was a couple of guests finding 40s versions of a couple of the songs. That's all, because that definitely changed things. And but one happy circumstance, when one of the songs is California, Here I Come, and I love, my favorite version actually is the Ray Charles version. Well, you can't use Ray Charles from the 1940s, but I lucked out, oh my God, and I said, well, just what if Jolson, the song was written for Al Jolson, was written for him specifically. Hmm. And he also re-recorded it in 1946. And it's priceless. I'm really pleased. To me, it might be the highlight of the whole show.
What is it about these songs, Bob, that have allowed so many of them to retain their vitality over the course of 100 years?
They were just good music. They're good. The whole idea of the Great American Songbook, and you can basically date it from roughly 20 or 21 up to 1950-ish, and then the music scene changed very dramatically, starting in the late 40s into the early 50s, leading stuff into rock and roll. But even before rock and roll, you know, there were songs that would not have been that popular in the 20s and 30s that were popular in the, like, for example, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, you know, Patti Page or something like that. That was flourishing in the early 50s. But anyway, that's about a 30-year period, the Great American Songbook. And there were so many craftsmen and people with trained backgrounds, and they just had, like, you know, I have a theory about things in terms of creativity. You know, you're always getting new technical advances in life. Always. There's always new tech. The way we're speaking is, you know, it's a technical advance that we couldn't have had 30 years ago. You wouldn't be in the studio such as you're sitting, and I wouldn't be sitting on a cell phone. You know, so we know that, the technical. But artistic creativity is timeless, and it doesn't, and sometimes it peaks, you know, the Renaissance. You know, you ever had a better, or Impressionism? Ever been anybody better painting pictures than Monet? Not for me. I mean, but people disagree. Well, I think there was a creative output that peaked so far in that period of time that we haven't had matched in numbers since then.
Well, it's interesting you bring up technology, because at least in terms of the delivery of music, of the way we got it and how it was produced, technology had a huge impact, because there's the style of singing changed once electronic amplification became possible. Made a Bing Crosby possible.
We advanced from Rudy Valley singing into the megaphone, which he did at times, and the microphone was very, very, very important. And Crosby was one of the early masters of how to use the microphone, and that certainly advanced his career dramatically in the 30s. And you're absolutely right. And then, of course, we get into, like, all kinds, you know, in the last 40 years, you know, electronic music and things you can do. Phil Spector, for example, wouldn't have been possible, you know, what he did with the wall of sound in the 60s would have been unimaginable in the 30s, you know. So, yeah, and absolutely, technology, and there's never ending technological advances, but doesn't mean we automatically have an improvement in artistic creativity. That is a different matter.
You opened the show with a classic from Tommy Dorsey and that boy singer who did okay for himself here, Frank Sinatra. Do you have a favorite Sinatra period? How do you compare his solo work to the work he did with Dorsey?
Yeah, he was young. He was thin. The voice was thinner. He was. I do have, definitely. Roughly from the period of time when he. First, when he met Nelson Riddle. Mm. Nelson Riddle was a pivotal person in his ascent to being this complete icon. If he hadn't met Nelson Riddle, and they hadn't put those two together, who knows how far Sinatra would have ever gotten. But and then when he formed his own label, Reprise, in 1961, he put out some tremendous albums. But probably that period. And then he went on too long. He's not the only one. He went on too long. There's some songs that they'll play on the Sirius Sinatra that I said, oh, don't do that. We don't need this. No, really, we don't need this. He stayed out on the stage too long. He was reading off, he was singing off a teleprompter. His voice, you know, he was out there. You know, no, but his peak from, say, roughly 1953 to 1977 or 80. Yeah, and my favorite album, I think I've told you that before, is Sinatra at the Sands. And that was his 50th birthday album in Las Vegas in 65. And that, to me, and everything that made him him, is in there. Every type of song that were so he specialized in are there. And I just I learned a lot from that album too. And of course, he's backed by Basie, and the arranger was the 32-year-old Quincy Jones. I mean, it's just
right.
A masterpiece.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. Well, we'll have to ask you a couple of sports questions. A World Series could be over tonight. Are you surprised at how this has played out?
Yes, I mean, baseball was so salivating so much about they're going to get this great World Series with these two icon teams, and so far, you know, it's great for Dodger fans, and I'm enjoying it because I don't root for the Yankees, but this isn't what baseball had in mind at all, and the only way it's going to be great now is if the Yankees can, you know, duplicate what the Red Sox did in 2004 against them, but I'm happy. I'm rooting for the Dodgers, but this isn't what Rob Manfred and company wanted. You know, they wanted to obviously knock down, drag out seven games, and so far they haven't got.
Am I hopelessly out of touch that it bothers me to see, like tonight in Game 4, teams going with an opener in the World Series?
We could have this discussion. You could do a week's worth of programming on that, the way this thing is devolved. I won't say evolved. It's just amazing that we've come to this and how they no, I'm not happy with that at all, and it's just amazing, particularly when you consider what the payrolls are of these teams and I mean these pitching staffs and this is what they resorted to. You can't find even a three-man staff. I mean, there's we could go on and on about this, but there's no getting away from it. It's not the optimum circumstance.
Celtics off to a terrific start in the new season. Is this team perhaps even better than they were last year?
Well, they're equally deep, and right now they're playing without Porzingis, and at the moment they're playing without Sam Hauser, and they still can negotiate this. They're really deep, and as deep as the team has any possibility of being in this day and age, and keeping the team together the way they were able to do is very, very rare. They're good. They just know how to play, and I'm definitely pleased. The guy that came up big last night, I've been a big fan of ever since he came in. Ever since I saw him at Oregon, pitchered, and I'm happy. I'm happy for him. But I love the way that Tatum is playing, and I like the way he and Brown have addressed it on the court. Whatever they're feeling about the Olympic thing, both of them, they certainly are playing well right now. So there's no reason, you know, that they won't win 60 games. I don't think as a floor again this year.
And it was so great to see Bob Cousy back at the Garden last week.
Yeah, Kuz, he made a cameo appearance, and that was nice. Thinking about the Kuz, I keep telling you, he he's not that mobile. He's in a wheelchair now for the most part, but he's 100% lucid. He's sharp and witty, and got all his faculties. And I'll tell you, sign me up. Put the paper in front of me. I'll sign me up myself up for that right now. He's terrific. He's a treasure. And he's the last surviving guy from the 57, the first championship team. So it is nice. It was really nice he could make it.
Well, you can check out Bob's new show, SiriusXM Radio, Channel 71, 40s Junction. A look back at the centennial celebration of 1924, a remarkable year in music. And you can hear it again tomorrow night at 7, Friday at 12 noon. It's also available on demand as well. Bob, it's a wonderful show. I'm so glad it finally came to fruition, and so glad you were able to come on and talk with us about it.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was a great thrill, obviously, and I'm grateful to Sirius for doing it. It was really nice of them to allow me to do this.
Thank you, Bob. We'll talk with you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Bob Ryan with us here on Downtown.